Over the next few minutes, you'll be hearing downright memorable moments in Hayeswood history. This should prove very entertaining listening.
I dedicate this tape to Ryan Pedalwood, Bartlettski, Hunter Molsky, who couldn't join us tonight, who made up some shit, and all the women in this class bag of tarts.
It's good to be back at school. Deep inside, I know I'm quite down, but it helps having plenty to keep busy with.
You might camcorder back here. I'm gonna. Justin, you know how it's gonna be a wet day when we get back, everybody, because we're gonna play this to everyone in A1.
My friend Billy yaps away and draws me into his silly games, so no one notices if I'm really quiet. After school, Mum and I head downtown. I'm always a bit on edge, being around so many strangers when she's sick. What if she started swearing or crying? I watch Mum closely in the bank, but she doesn't do anything worse than purse her lips. After looking at the computers and getting a thick shake at Fitzgerald's, we head to the doctor's for Mum's appointment. I counted her tablets last night, and there was definitely one less one.
Maureen?
Dr. Galen appears. She's a pale woman about Mum's age with long brown hair. Mum stands up and puts on a smile. I say a tiny prayer in my mind for Mum to tell the doctor everything. Hopefully it's obvious that Mum isn't right. I can tell by looking at her, so surely the doctor can too. I stay in the waiting room while Mum walks off with Dr. Galen. To my left is an old man with a white patch on his face that makes me shiver.
I'm ready.
Mum appears, clutching her handbag. She wasn't very long. I look around, wondering if Dr. Galen wants to say anything to me, but she's talking to the old man with the patch. Mum and I wander back to the car park where it's getting dark. What did the doctor say?
Just to keep taking my tablets,
Mum says flatly.
Did you tell her how you're not well and you've been crying? She said I can take an extra one or have Panamax if I get a migraine.
Mum's eyes become shadows as she stares downwards. She minces her lips and cracks her teeth.
Mum!
I stop dead on the spot as a car drives past. I cross my arms, watching the dumb back of Mum plodding ahead. She doesn't even notice. I can't stand being near her right now. I stroll slowly behind, keeping out of earshot of her hissing and crunching. What would happen if I ran away? She wouldn't realise until she got to the car. I wonder if she'd even care. Where would I go? To the library? A safety house? Help, there's a stranger. It's my mum. Mum calls into the drive-through bottle shop. A young bloke bends down and peers in.
Two stubbies of Bogues.
He gives her the change and tells her to have a good night. Mum says she will in a croaky tone. I'm eyeing off the white station wagon parked next to us. I picture myself in the middle of the kids with another woman as my parent in the driver's seat. In my mind, I'm not even saying anything because I don't need to. She is together and normal and understands me. The boy has his head down, playing a video game. The girl dances her arms to the radio. They're not worrying about anything at all. They won't have to, not even once. Look at all the company they get. I get nothing, with lonely on top. How is my life this unfair?
Bugger!
Mum turns the key as the car farts back to life. I shift uncomfortably in my seat, careful not to shake up the stubbies.
Shall we get takeaway for tea?
Says Mum. I think about the empty fridge at home. I like groceries.
No, Mum, we need to do the shopping. Call into Rolf Voss. I don't really feel like it now.
Please, Mum, I want you to make tea. I can help. We can't afford to get takeaway all the time. Once we're parked at Rolf Voss, I stride ahead and grab a shopping trolley. Instead of zooming it around like normal, I start slowly down each aisle, looking left and right and thinking about the things Mum usually gets. Cat food, beef German, what we call luncheon meat, bread, milk, toothpaste, margarine, frozen donuts. I take the things and put them in my trolley. It's fun playing grown-ups and hiding from Mum. I'm in a maze while she's in a daze. I unload our things onto the conveyor belt.
How's your day been?
Asks the checkout girl. Mum's busy staring into her purse. I nod and say, good. When we make it home, I unpack the groceries while Mum goes to lie down. I'm getting hungry, so I ask if she can start on tea.
Oh, in 5 minutes.
I'm feeling inspired to try my own thing. Cooking has been one of my favourite subjects this semester, and already we've made a Waldorf salad and jacket potato in class. I take a plate and squat down in front of the fridge and pull out everything that can be eaten raw. I cut slivers of beef German, open a tin of sliced beetroot, peel some lettuce leaves, spoon out some coleslaw, pinch some alfalfa sprouts, grate some carrot, and even do a thin slice of orange to have on the side. I spread a fresh piece of bread with butter. I pour a glass of juice and sit down at the table. I look down at my plate, made up of fresh things that I just picked out from the supermarket. My own rainbow salad. It's Friday, and Nan's back from the mainland. I'm catching the bus over after school. It's the first time I've travelled over by myself. I make sure to get a seat on the right so I can gaze out over the sea.
Can't get you out of my heart.
The bus passes Doctor's Rocks and then turns right along the old Bass Highway and past the golf course with rows of huge macrocarpa trees guarding the view. To the right is the wide, flat, pale sea and Table Cape. Green to the left, blue to the right, yellow sun ahead, and space everywhere. I feel better already. Nan is just a bum poking up between two shrubs in the front garden. I say, "Hi, Nan," from a distance so I don't scare her. I'm always worried about Nan's heart.
"Is that my Justin already?"
She says my name out of breath in a kind of sing-song.
"Oh, where does the time go?"
We hug carefully as she's holding a pair of secateurs. I smell her scent and feel her strong squeeze.
"No, lady,"
she says, brushing strands of wispy hair back.
"See where my roses have attacked me?"
Pop's still up in Queensland with his brothers, so it's a chance to spend time with Nan alone. In the lounge room, Nan has the jigsaw puzzle I got her for Christmas spread out on the orange card table. Like fishing, it's a relaxing way to pass the time, and there's plenty of time to talk while you work. Every now and then a piece pushes into place, and it's very satisfying. On the box is a painting of a young girl in a white dress reading a blue book to a brown dog. Nan's already worked out the book and the dog's face, so they're floating inside the frame like little islands. I give Nan an update on Mum. I'm careful with my words because I want to tell her how bad it's been without worrying her too much. Nan shakes her head and frowns. Nan can make sense of most things, but she can't understand why Mum is still sick.
Isn't she taking her tablets? Can't she see how much it upsets you? Why can't she pull herself out of it?
I mentioned that Mum went to her doctor yesterday, but nothing much came out of it.
I don't think your Mum tells her the full story, says Nan.
She's very independent, your Mum, very stubborn. She's been that way from the beginning.
I'm sure she can be quite crafty when she wants to be.
Perhaps you ought to go in there and let her doctor know what's really going on. That idea scares me, so I change the subject. I tell Nan about my excellent school report. Miss Stone said I was intelligent and independent, with a capacity for original thought and a willingness to help others.
Oh, Justin, Nan says slowly. Congratulations!
Nan mentions how they came to Montello Primary for Grandparents' Day last year, and Mr. Blaisley told them what an outstanding student I was, and how I showed great leadership potential. I'm beaming inside. Pleasing Nan is the best feeling. It turns out today is Nan and Pop's anniversary. They have been married 45 years. They met at the Wynyard Show after Pop got back from World War II. Nan shows me the photos of them in their younger days. It's strange seeing them like this. I've only ever known them to be old. You were very pretty as a young woman.
Thanks very much, but I'm not now.
Oh, you're not bad for a 67-year-old.
Oh, you're a sweetheart.
Nan moves from one wild story to the next. I've heard most of them before. For each of Nan's kids, there seems to be a story about how they nearly died. Max turned blue from asthma, while Mum turned yellow from jaundice. Nigel was white as a sheet, with his eyes rolling in the back of his head.
I had to hold the lantern out the window so your pop could drive our Model T forward in the fog. I grabbed your Mum by the ankles and went chunk and shook her like a rabbit, and all this black bile came down off her lungs.
Mum's ankles still click to this day.
Then with Nigel, I kept yelling, Nigel, Nigel, stay with me, Nigel. He'd been drinking Southern Comfort, and his mates had delivered him to our doorstep, paralytic. If I hadn't found him, he would have drowned in his own vomit. Pop was trying to nurse you, and you were screaming in his arms.
Mum always said I was a quiet baby.
Oh, you had a set of lungs on you when you needed it. Geez, I nearly died that day.
I join a corner piece up to the rest of the jigsaw. We have all the borders of our puzzle now. Now we just have to fill in the middle.
My mother had so many kids, one after the other all the time, I felt unloved. There was kids following me and my mum had no time for me and I felt shut out. And we're all bloody stupid.
Nan was the second oldest of nine kids. As soon as she turned nine, she had to learn to carry bags of spuds on her back and look after all her brothers and sisters.
She used to ground me. Yeah. Do this, do that, do something else. Go to the young one. You were very pretty as a young one.
I did not know a childhood,
she says sadly. I fiddle with two puzzle pieces, trying to force them together.
I know it's hard sometimes with your Mum. But if you start to get down, you've just got to remind yourself. There's always someone else far worse off than you, Justin. There are children your age who are quadriplegics.
I don't know any kids in wheelchairs.
Some people, Justin, dwell on the past. And they say, oh, woe is me. I've been so hard done by. But what's the use in that? It doesn't change anything. If you've got a problem, then talk it over properly. Otherwise, get in, focus on the future, and work towards your dream. That's what I've always done, and that's what I hope you'll continue to do. You'll face a lot of ups and downs in this life, Justin. You've got to learn to stay positive. And remember, the strong survive, the weak, they fall.
Nan's voice is loud and clear. The words are simple and direct. She's counting on me. There's a reason to keep going. I have two pieces of the girl's face joined up. I hover them around the table, searching for the right spot.